Going all the way back to the prequels, I like it. You have to look at the entire canon. You can't just pick and choose your films. Very pleased to have join us our baseball insider here on May 4th, Adnan Virk from ESPN and, of course, the host of the Cinephile podcast. Mr. Virk, how are you today?
Rob, I'm doing fantastic. May the 4th be with you and everybody back there in Calgary.
Absolutely. Okay, so you're the movie guy. Where does the Lucasfilms fit for you? Is it impactful on your movie watching, or are you just, you know, a guy on the outside watching? Where do you fit when it comes to the Star Wars universe?
Yeah, on the scale of like absolute geekdom and dress up on this day to complete disdain, I'm somewhere in the middle, but probably leaning towards more geekdom. I have no issue with those who love the films. I completely recognize that they are enormous favorites and beloved, and I like them, but they're not something that I've had to revisit many a time. You know, I've seen,
okay.
I believe I've seen all of them. I Rogue One, the most recent one, I thought was disappointing. I thought it was awfully boring.
Mm-hmm.
But the reboot that J.J. Abrams did a year and a half ago, I thought was terrific because it reminded me of the original Star Wars. I think Empire Strikes Back is a terrific movie, one of the best movie sequels. So I like them, but I'm not crazy about them. They're not something that I revisit too often, to be honest with you.
Well, fair enough. And it's interesting that you would point out to Empire because, and I know Boomer and the guys talked about this a couple of days ago, but it's on your podcast, on Cinephile, the Godfather trilogy. You spent some time over the weekend with that. And that, Godfather 2, is considered, is it not, the greatest sequel?
You nailed it, Rob. I appreciate you caring enough to follow me on Cinephile and paying attention to my hits with Boomer, because you're right. I was there on Saturday at the Godfather reunion at Tribeca. I mean, it was incredible. We think of terms in sports of dream teams of talent. That was a dream team. On that stage was Francis Ford Coppola, Talia Shire, Diane Keaton, James Caan, Robert Duvall, Robert De Niro, and Al Pacino. Like, Pacino and De Niro are my favorite actors of all time. So to have them on that stage, along with those other illustrious actors, was incredible, and they told such wonderful stories. I think it's inspiring to all of us. The fact that Pacino was not who the studio heads wanted. They wanted Ryan O'Neill. They wanted Robert Redford. And Coppola said, don't laugh. There are blonde-haired, blue-eyed Sicilians. But they just didn't want Al. They thought he was too short. He was a theater actor. But he was able to convince them because of that great scene in the first one where he shoots Sollozzo and McCluskey. And I hope, no spoiler alert, it's been 45 years.
I think so,
The Godfather.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was the scene. And Coppola knew, you know, this is, I'll give you the athlete analogy, Rob. It would be like a manager, you know, kind of moving up a hitter in the lineup. You know, normally you'd move him down because you go, he's slumping. He's like, no, I'm going to move him up, put him in the three slot, give him a chance to shine.
Mm-hmm.
Pacino was struggling the first week, and even Coppola recognized that. So he moved up that scene to the second week of shooting because he knew the studio wanted to fire Pacino. And he told Pacino, listen, they want to replace you. I'm the only guy hanging in here for you. He moved up the Sollozzo scene. It'd be like double shifting your star player in a key hockey game.
Right.
Give him the chance to survive. And Pacino was incredible in that scene. And then the studio left him alone. And Godfather 2, you're right. My wife and I actually had tickets to both films, but we have three kids. I couldn't abandon them for like 14 hours. So we ended up going just for the second one. And normally people ask me, what's the better one, first or second? And I'm inclined to say first because I love Brando so much. But I got to be honest, Rob, watching the second one in a New York theater in Radio City Music Hall, it is so rich, so emotionally satisfying. The fact that he has his brother killed, like that scene where he says, Fredo, I know it was you. You broke my heart. I mean, the audience was literally applauding at a half a dozen scenes. It was amazing.
Well, I'm jealous. I mean, I'm jealous of a lot of things, but I'm really jealous of that. Let me ask you one kind of offbeat question of that. The influence that those two would carry forward into future movies, I think of Heat, that I think is terribly underrated or maybe doesn't get talked about or doesn't get shown enough anymore. But I love that chemistry in that movie between those two guys, and I almost felt like it was a carryover in a way. I know they've done other projects together, but in those two projects, I just thought there was something about, you know, that project moving into Heat.
No, you're bang on, Rob. I mean, listen, these guys, and we forget this sometimes, just because they're not in movies together doesn't mean they don't know each other. And Pacino and De Niro, before they made Heat in 95, like you said, they were in Godfather 2, but of course didn't share any scenes. De Niro was playing a young Vito Corleone. But Al and Bob both said, listen, we've known each other for years.
Yeah.
Of course, we're both these Italian-American actors from New York. We always see each other at the same events, the same galas. We're both big fans of each other. It was just the right time to find the right project. And I agree with you. Michael Mann's Heat is criminally underrated. It's one of the great crime films of the last 25 years. Came out in 95, the great shootout scene. Of course, the scene where they put them together. I mean, how smart was Michael Mann, the director, to go, all right, I'm going to build up Pacino as the cop, De Niro as the criminal, and the whole thing is set off by this great confrontation in the coffee shop between these two guys just trading barbs back with each other and trying to size each other up. And I remember at one of the press conferences, they had asked Pacino, well, you know, what's your favorite De Niro movie? And he went into detail. He said, oh, how much he loved Raging Bull and Taxi Driver and Goodfellas. And they asked De Niro, what's your favorite Pacino movie? And he just goes, all three Godfathers. Right. Like, that's all that needs to be said.
It's funny because I was going to launch right into baseball with you, but the May 4th stuff got us going on a movie. So one last one, and then we'll switch to baseball. And that has to do with you have one of the guys that I love listening to in podcast format, and that's Jeff Garland. He's part of your podcast this week, right?
He was unbelievable. We had him come on Tuesday, and he is so down to earth. And you're right. He used to have his own podcast, and I asked him why he stopped doing it. Because I said, just like me, I'm a sportscaster as a podcast because I just love movies. For you, Jeff, obviously, you have this other interest. And he said, honestly, man, I just ran out of time. He said, we're busy shooting the new season of Curb, which is almost done, which is going to be coming out in the fall. He's got the Goldbergs. And he goes, the biggest thing was having to get guests. He goes, it was just like annoying to be like, okay, is Will Ferrell available next Wednesday at 10 a.m.? He goes, so I just needed a producer, somebody else to do it for me. But he goes, I love the concept of podcast. He was incredibly down to earth. At the end of the interview, he said to me, you're a delightful young man. That was a lot of fun. And he's genuinely funny. He had a great, for speaking of Canada, because at one point I mentioned he does stand-up. So I said, have you ever been to Just for Laughs in Toronto or Montreal? He goes, no, I've never been to Montreal. He goes, the heck with Montreal. He said, when I wanted to go there, they didn't ask me. Now they ask me all the time, so I always say no. And he goes, I hear Montreal is beautiful, but I have no interest. I'm never going to go to Montreal ever again. I don't care. I'm never going to go. But I can't wait for the new season of Curb. He's a huge Cubs fan, and he said he really tried hard to get Joe Madden into the new season of Curb, but the schedules didn't align because it was during spring training. And I said, dude, I want to see Larry David and you and Joe Madden. And he goes, well, I don't think it's going to happen this time, but if we do another season of Curb, Joe Madden's in. He goes, I want to be his best friend.
Now we only have to wait 6 or 7 years for that. His podcast is called By the Way, if you can find it. And Adnan, I'm not sure, did you hear the one with Larry David?
I haven't actually. I wanted to listen to it. How good was it?
It is phenomenal. Well, you know what, David? Larry David can be that guy. He can be difficult. And Garland just played him like a fiddle. And by halfway through, because I listen to a lot of podcasts when I go for a little run, and I had tears. True. Just tears coming down. They are so good together.
Oh, that's awesome. I said to Jeff, I said, you know, in Curb, you're the best friend that anyone could have. And he kind of laughed. He's like, that is true, right? I'm like, yeah, whatever Larry does, you're always backing him. You're always defending him. And I said, I know it must be so tough to pick favorite episodes. I said, but I just love Palestinian chicken. And he laughed. He goes, that's probably the one that most people reacted to. Like, that's probably what people tell us is our favorite. I said, how about you? And Jeff said, I love the one where Cheryl has a bad itch, and then him and Larry get Girls Gone Wild videos. That one was my favorite in particular.
I'll throw in Black Swan, because I thought that was fantastic.
No doubt.
And the beauty of that show on so many levels. Adnan Virk, speaking of so many levels, our guest, we're talking movies, of course, the host of Cinephile, the podcast. Make sure you check that out. Also, baseball tonight. So let's get to some baseball, and let's start with Boston, because it all seemed to happen at Fenway this week.
It was unreal what happened. I mean, first off, the racist taunts at Adam Jones, which is terrible. Yep. I was actually broadcasting baseball tonight was from Fenway this past Sunday. It was the Red Sox and Cubs. And on the way there, one of my friends, we were driving up, just said, would you ever live in Boston? And I said, no. And he goes, that was quick. And I said, well, I've got to be honest with you. And I swear, Rob, this is Sunday. I said, I generally find people of color, I go, Boston just isn't that comfortable. It's a very kind of insular town. The next night, this Adam Jones situation happens. He goes, oh, my God, I was just talking to Adnan about this. And I said, listen, I don't want to blight the entire city of Boston. There's a lot of great people there. Of course there are.
Mm-hmm.
I said, but there's no denying that they have a troubled history with race and with African-American athletes, and that there's a reason that a lot of black athletes do want to play there. Barry Bonds famously said, you can pay me whatever you want. I'm never going to play at Boston. That's a racist city. No thanks.
Yeah.
And so the latest incident with Adam Jones is unfortunate. Again, I never want to smear an entire city. Of course, there's lots of wonderful people there. But there's no denying the fact the Red Sox were the last team to integrate. There's no denying when Jim Rice was the only black player there, he faced a lot of abuse from his own fan base. So, anyways, you have this awful situation with Jones. I'm glad that the Red Sox organization tried to react, you know, giving the fan a ban for life. Obviously, Jones got a great ovation. But then the whole situation with Machado, and good for Machado, Rob. Like, I like that he stuck up for himself. Listen, the slide was unintentional, okay? If you didn't like it, fine. One guy can throw at you. I get that's the unwritten rules, fine. But we don't need to start throwing behind his head like Brandon Barnes did, okay? If Chris still wants to throw a message, fine. You can't just five times now try to knock out Manny Machado from the game. And then last night, what is Sam Hulbert doing? Clearly, Gausman on a 76-mile-an-hour curveball is not intentionally hitting somebody and then gets tossed. And clearly, Adam Jones was talking to himself. He was not mad at the umpire. He should not have got tossed.
Yeah.
It's been a terrible mess. I suppose it's interesting as a baseball fan because we're talking about it, but it was just a real bad look for Major League Baseball.
Well, let's kind of divvy this up. First of all, I want to take you back to the first incident. Do you believe, because a lot of things were said coming out of the Adam Jones incident, you know, and one of the great ones is, well, this will begin a conversation. I'm sorry, it's 2017. We should be beyond having conversations on this. But do you see this as being a seminal moment or a period of time which may bring change in that city when it comes to that problem?
I hope so, because, you know, we're in Connecticut here, which is New England. We're only an hour 40 from Boston, and yep. I work with a lot of guys from Boston. And so, listen, they're awfully ashamed right now. They know that their city is getting hammered right now, and for good reason. You shouldn't have any sort of racial taunts being directed at any player, period. So I think at the very least they're looking in the mirror and going, all right, this can never happen again. This cannot taint what is a great city because of some idiots here. And,
right.
and the only way you can do that is with strong punitive measures. And that's the key, right? It wasn't just, all right, that fan has to leave the game. It's not just you're ejected for the season. You're banned for life. You never get to come to Fenway again. And as a lot of my colleagues were saying, the biggest impediment should be those around them. If you hear anybody using that kind of language, you go, hey, buddy, that's it. Get out of here. Take a hike. So I hope it's an incident that goes away. But you're right. It was awful to actually hear about it.
All right. So now let's weigh into the other controversy. But before we do that, we're a month into this radio relationship, you and I. I need to establish something with Adnan Virk. Where do you fit on the unwritten rules of baseball with Goose Gossage at one end and whoever at the other end? Where are you when it comes to unwritten rules?
Yeah, I'm not a fan because I get the fact that they've been around forever and hence they are unwritten. And if you have to play the game, you play by a code. But I honestly think when you're talking about players' health and safety, then it stops being fun and it starts being ludicrous. Like, I suppose, Rob, if it's just, hey, drill a guy in the calf and it's just the way it's always been done and it's about loyalty and sticking up for a teammate, I suppose. But there are way too many times I see guys headhunting and there are way too many times that I worry that someone's going to not only have a major injury, but lose their life. And if Manny Machado got dinged in the head, I mean, God forbid what could happen. Just because you're trying to retaliate because you think his slide was too aggressive on Dustin Pedroia? And what if a hitter loses his mind and takes his bat out to the mound and starts swinging wildly at the pitcher? I mean, it sounds inconceivable, but I'm telling you, one of these days there's going to be an awful incident, God forbid.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you, but it is one of those things, I suppose, that we all have to establish where we're at. I mean, we kind of had this conversation last year when the new rules were put in, especially in the second base slide, and you kind of, where are you at in terms of player safety and things like that? Games evolve, sports evolve, and sometimes our thinking has to evolve, so I appreciate you answering that question, which now brings me to the third part of this puzzle. Rob Manfred took the unusual steps of calling both teams prior to the game yesterday. You referenced two really questionable ejections. Is there any connection? Is this one of those cases where the commissioner said, I don't care. I don't care if you throw it 50 miles an hour, it rolls up and hits him in the shins, you're gone. Is there any chance that this was related to Manfred's phone call?
I suppose, and it's interesting you mention it, because I was filling in today with Ryan Russillo, so we did 3 hours of talk radio, and we definitely brought the topic up, and Ryan and I both said it was just an outrageously terrible decision, but one of our guys on the staff did say, he goes, listen, if Manfred's telling the umpire, I don't care what it is, I don't care how borderline it is, whatever judgment call anybody gets hit, they're gone, then I do understand having to follow your boss's orders. I mean,
yeah.
But in that case, I think if I'm Sam Hulbert, I would have the stones to be like, listen, I'm not going to eject the guy when it's so ridiculous, when it's clearly not intentional. And I have the ability to say that to Rob Manfred or through the Umpires Association. We have a union, et cetera. I'm not going to lose my job just because I didn't eject a guy. I'm sure that you're right. I'm sure there was a call. Zero tolerance, clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
But those two judgments were awful.
Yeah. He is Adnan Virk from ESPN down the South Street Burger guest hotline. Let's move on from Boston. So Sunday, they lose 23-5 to Washington. Last night, they win 16-5 over Atlanta. You can't be disappointed watching the Mets. There's something to talk about, right, with this club? Always something to talk about.
Yeah, it was funny. Mark Teixeira, who's now part of our coverage now at ESPN, he's terrific. We were talking Sunday at Fenway. And he said, you know, the Mets are kind of like the Clippers, I feel like, some ways. And I said, in what respect? He goes, like, good team, good fan base, good talent, but they just always get burned by something. Like they should be better than they are. And I said, well, they made the World Series a couple of years ago. He goes, yeah, I know. But like, he goes, just think about recent history. You know, Syndergaard refusing an MRI, Matt Harvey's injury and not being on the same page as Terry Collins. He goes, you know, Cespedes contract squabbles. He goes, there's always something with the Mets. It's never clean. I'm like, well, it is actually. Ownership issues with Madoff. I'm like, yeah, it is true. There is always definitely a soap opera with New York. And it felt like rock bottom that game Sunday. I'm like, how do you give up 23 runs? And the fact that Syndergaard had refused the MRI, and then it comes back, he's got the torn lat, going to be out a few months. I mean, it's definitely messy. And for me, I just think, I don't know how New York crawls out of it because their offense isn't good enough. They got old in a hurry, and their best chance with those young pitchers, and the best pitcher, Syndergaard, who, of course, came over in that Blue Jays, yeah, Ari Dickey trade, is now done for a while. So I don't see the Mets rebounding. And more to the point, Rob, even if they were better, Washington's stacked. I mean, the Nationals aren't going anywhere. They're winning that National League East.
No, I mean, it's few and far between when you see 23, 25 runs being scored by a Major League Baseball team over another Major League Baseball team, and they feel like almost any night that can happen, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. A few of the guys are saying this is why you should have bigger rosters. That's what Teixeira was saying. In fact, they've expanded rosters. What happens is, you're right, when it's like 16 or 17, yeah, I mean, you're killing your bullpen.
Right.
Then you have position players pitching. And he goes, that shouldn't happen. Like, someone's going to get hurt. Now, Timmy Kirchen, who's the best, you know, he's a baseball lifer. He said to me, no, I like that. To your point, he goes, I like seeing 23 runs. I like seeing position player because that's part of the game. There's no easy way out. And the residual effect of that game, it can go for days because then all of a sudden, let's say the next night, the Mets pitcher has a short outing. The bullpen's already gassed. We used everybody to get through a 23-run loss. So that's part of the strategizing.
Let's flip over to the West. Just talk a little bit about the Dodgers. And you'll have to excuse me. Last I heard, Puig was in the minors last year, but last night had himself quite a game. Yeah. Do we call this a comeback? Is this a comeback? Is this the retribution? Is this the kind of the revival of Yasiel Puig?
I think so. I am completely a novice when it comes to fantasy baseball, but everybody in the ESPN baseball staff is doing it this year. So I said, okay, if everyone's doing it, fine. I don't know how to follow these things. And when we were going through the draft, I took a flyer on Yasiel Puig, and my thinking was, well, his stock has never been lower. Like you said, he went to the minors. Maybe he'll use this motivation and retribution to come back. So selfishly, yes, I'm that guy saying got him in the pool. So I'm very happy that Puig is back. But on a larger level, there was a stretch, Rob, a couple of years ago. People were saying, is he the best player in baseball? That's
right.
How high his stock was. Not that he's the best, but it was in that conversation. You know this. People were saying, is he top 10?
Yep.
Is he going to be top 5 one day? He was so electrifying, that balance of speed and power, like 5 to a player. And then it was such a drastic fall from grace where people just said he's not focusing enough, he's immature, reckless driving, etc. So I'm happy for Puig. I think he's always had the talent. It's just a matter of being focused and have that maturity. And it's a good sign, certainly, for the Dodgers because they locked him up for that 6-year deal. Originally, it looked like a steal. Then it looked like a terrible move. They were trying to trade him. No, but there was no takers. So good for Puig. He's definitely back.
Last one for you, and it has to do with the local team or Canada's team. The Jays, not much different than the last time we talked, except maybe a little bit more banged up when it comes to starters.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty depressing right now because it was at the situation where literally on Sunday, okay, first series win. It took until April 30th, which is awfully sad, but whatever. They won back-to-back games. Okay, let's win 3 games in a row, which they did. Took the first game on Monday. Batista hit only a second home run of the season. They beat the Yankees. But now overall, you're right. Sanchez hurt, Happ hurt, Donaldson's out, Tulowitzki's out. I mean, it's a really tough situation right now when you're relying on the likes of Matt Latos to all of a sudden be reclamation projects. And yesterday's example was when you go, all right, Steve Pierce, big home run, the Jays jump out on top 4-0, but then immediately Matt Holliday, 3-run shot, and you go, here we go again. And the bullpen just looks fatigued already, and there's no answers in sight. And Aaron Judge is ridiculous. He's got 13 home runs in 25 games for the Yankees. He might be the new biggest star in the Bronx. So it's awfully upsetting for Toronto. I mean, going into last night, 9-18 was their worst start to 27 games since 2004. And now it's looking even worse. So I know there's no relief in sight right now, unfortunately, for the Jays.
Good stuff, my friend. Really appreciate the visit, as always. Want to get everybody over to the podcast, Cinephile. And, of course, you'll check in with the morning show next week, and we'll hear from you next Thursday. Adnan, always a pleasure.
Rob, you always make me an offer I can't refuse. I appreciate it.
There you go. Well, one day a horse head. Well, I won't go there. Anyway, we'll talk soon. Thanks, my friend.
Take care, man.